isn't what we say or think that defines us, but what we do. Jane Austen. This is the What We Do by Kira Kazantsev podcast.
Hello, hello, hello. Happy Wednesday. It's my favorite day of the week because it's What We Do Wednesday. So I've been talking about my intern search a lot lately, and ladies and gentlemen, we have a winner. You can check out my Instagram to find out who the lucky lady is, and I might just have her on soon, so stay tuned. And I hope everybody is having a great Wednesday, and I just want to thank everyone who reached out about the internship opportunity and applied, and hopefully I'll have more opportunities to bring people onto the team soon. So stay tuned. You never know. It was an awesome process and I really got to know some really great people, and I wish I could pick everybody, but I'm really excited about my intern. So go check her out on the gram. Okay, so last week I had a Miss USA on the show, Kristen Dalton. And this week, I thought it would be only right if I balanced that out by having on a Miss America. So I would like to welcome none other than Mrs. Savvy Shields Wolf to the show. Savvy was Miss America 2017, and I'm so proud to call her my Miss America sister. She was born and raised in Fayetteville, Arkansas. Savvy, an art major at the University of Arkansas, spent her year as Miss America advocating for healthy life decisions with Savvy's Choices, working with CMN Hospitals, the USO, and much, much more. Savvy just got married, and she's literally living her best life with her new husband, Nate, and she continues to crush the social media game and is releasing some original artwork soon. Today, we are talking her tips and tricks for social media, married life and planning a wedding, mental health and dealing with her mental health in a positive way, her time as Miss America, her hopes for the future, and just a little background to help you get to know who Savvy Shields is. So please enjoy the episode. Hi, Savvy Shields. How are you?
Hi, Kira Kazantsev. I'm good. I miss you.
I miss you too. It's weird going from Miss America, where we're seeing each other every single day, to like never.
Every single day for every second. But it's good. I like social media. We can creep on each other's lives for forever.
Yeah, exactly. So it's basically the same, but different.
Basically, right.
What are you up to? What are you doing?
I just finished documenting all of my art that I've painted for the past month, which was kind of nutso. But so just documented all of that. So hopefully I'll be selling it within the past, like, or next, I should say, like 2 weeks or so.
Okay. So where do you get your inspiration for this type of stuff? Like, what would you say your aesthetic is? Like, tell us about the Savvy Shields art thing, because it's something that I could never imagine doing. So it's just fascinating to me.
Really and truly, I'm a firm believer that anyone can create and anyone can paint, just like any other muscle. I really believe it's a muscle that we use, and it's like just like a creative muscle. So I really believe that you could, and I think that you should. I think it's really fun.
Well, my creative muscles are like my upper body strength, non-existent. So I'll just leave it to you.
Deal. We'll do it that way. I've been actually giving this a lot of thought recently, because the art world and my pageant world, in a Venn diagram, there's a very small sliver that overlaps. And for a very long time, I kind of kept them really separate. You know, I kept them as far away from each other as possible and try to compartmentalize those parts of my brain. But I realized that wasn't really being truthful in my art, and that wasn't really being truthful in my pageant life, because those are both huge parts of who I am and what that means. And I've been giving a lot of thought to what it means to be inspired or be inspiring, and the people I look up to, and all that jazz. And I've kind of, this is a very long tangent, but I've been reading a lot.
I love a good tangent, please.
Well, let me get started. Let me flip my hair back. But I've been thinking a lot about, you know, the complexity of humans. And for a really long time, I in my, you know, feminine side of my life went full throttle and was as extra as possible, you know, wearing clip-in extensions every day, gluing eyelashes and whatnot to my face and body. And then in...
Where else are you gluing eyelashes?
I don't know. We're getting real extra, though. More of the story. Extra in this feminine world, but, and then my artistic side and in my artistic friendships, and it was this entirely different side of me. And I almost felt like conflicted and convicted that I wasn't one person all the time. But I've slowly come to realize, and I would say even within the past month, that these multiple humans can live in the same body and that that's okay. That I can really love super feminine, hyper feminine, pink and feathers and glitter and all of these things while on the same thread, really loving this creative modern art that can be at times dark and express that darkness, but can also express the light. And I don't know. So I've been getting my inspiration, I think, a lot from honestly processing my own emotions and processing what it means to be a human, what it means to be a woman, what it means to be female, what it means to have been Miss America for a time, because we all know I'm still processing that. We all are for a good, you know, another 5 years, I'm figuring.
The rest of our lives. What did I get myself into?
I'll probably be done processing that hopefully in the next 10 years, but we'll see. But I've been getting it from there. And then a lot of, you know, women that I look up to. I paint a lot of figures and I paint a lot of dancer girls and women. And that's kind of what inspires me, are other people and the way that they live their lives. And I want to live by their example. Very long tangent, but yes.
No, that's wonderful. And I think it's really great for you as a role model, because whether we like it or not, we kind of sign up to become a role model. And for you to show all the young women that look up to you that it's okay to be multifaceted and it's okay to have different passions. And in fact, it's encouraged that whatever is your passion, whether it's like sports or pageantry or dance or whatever, that it's okay to also feel super passionate about other things, because I think it just makes you a more well-rounded human.
Oh, absolutely. And those are parts of you in, you know, to be the fullest version of yourself that you're designed to be. I think that you really need to let all those areas flourish. And, you know, for a very long time, I mean, I didn't even start off as an art major because I didn't think that it would have been accepted, or I didn't feel like it was a confident even career choice to make. And so the first 2 years of college, I was a business major and even like dabbled in being a math major. I don't know. We'll get into that another day. But I was painting until 3 a.m. every single night. And I kind of just realized, this is not where I'm meant to be. And so it was one of the weirdest decisions that I made, but also one of the most liberating to kind of go through and really explore this part of me that I was really scared to kind of let other people know about.
Yeah. So are you doing like prints? Are you doing originals? How can people get these things?
So we're going to be doing, I'm going to do another round of prints, but I'm going to be doing limited prints. So I think that there's about 5 that I really, really love, 5 different works. And so I'm going to be making, I think, maybe like 25 prints of each. And then if people really love them, if there's really more demand, then we'll see what goes from there. And then the originals, I've never sold originals before, so I don't really know how that goes, with full transparency.
The highest bidder.
The highest bidder. We'll do an Instagram live with the highest bidder. It'll be great.
You know that would be phenomenal. People would die for that.
It'd be so funny. But yeah, I mean, I'm just so excited. I feel every day, I think how blessed am I that I get to actually do this, because as not many people get to, and I'm very fortunate. I'm very thankful.
The world that we live in, social media has this like, it's all kind of like 90% fake. There's nothing tangible.
Oh, there's nothing real on the internet. Oh my
yeah.
goodness.
The fact that you're like producing a tangible, solid thing is so cool and different for the world that we live in.
That's like literally the best compliment ever. I think what's so crazy, and because that's a huge other part of my job is, and we've even talked about this, but social media and being a social influencer and a writer and a content creator, that's a huge other part of what I do. And it's a whole nother world to kind of dive into when, just like you're saying, nothing on the internet's real. I mean, in every one of my pictures, I either have makeup on or fake hair on, or it's been edited to where the light even what the light is, or my shirt was a different color. I mean, nothing was real, but that's also, you know, a really fun area. I mean, from social media, that's where I gain all my inspiration. That's where I've met so many amazing people. That's where people are being able to share their voices and talk about things that are important to them and express that on a huge channel, which is amazing. But there's also a lot of dangerous things that social media has created. But I think it's, you know, a very fine line that we walk across and figuring out how to deal with it.
Yeah. So social media is obviously a huge part of, kind of, like you said, your job, your everyday life. So I know there's probably tons of people out there that would love any of your social media kind of tips and tricks and advice. So like, what is your, like, the social media Savvy Shields guide to success?
So I was even thinking about this, and this is such a funny thing because even as I say it out loud, I feel a little convicted inside, because my main piece of advice and the thing that I felt has increased my following and has gotten me to the next level is to not compare yourself and to not do exactly what everyone else is doing. But as I say that out loud, I like am getting almost like cringy inside, because I compare myself every single day to the people that are in front of me or following me on my feed. I mean, it's a really crazy world. But again, going back to that very fine line of finding your voice and finding your niche and writing that full. If there's someone on the internet that's not doing what you're doing, then that's a good thing. You know, not trying to fit a very specific mold or find a very specific color palette to create or finding, you know, the exact types of pictures to post. I think it's really cool when in this world where there are hundreds of millions of thousands of people on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, writing blogs, to be as different and as you as possible, I think is a really powerful thing. That's also probably one of the most difficult things to do in this age where, you know, we find lots of worth in how many likes we're getting, if people are reacting to us. And I don't know if people will react to you being you right off the bat, but I think that that's like one of the most amazing things that you can do. When I think about people that I follow and people that I want to emulate, they sometimes have nothing in common. And I think that that's a really cool thing, to really engage in who you want to be and not who you want to recreate yourself to be. I don't know if that makes sense.
Yeah. Well, it's so much easier to look at someone and be like, I'm going to do what that girl is doing, but it doesn't really work for you because it's inauthentic to you.
Exactly. Yeah. I think that that's also one of the, just the hardest things is to, because I don't really think we ever truly know all of ourselves. I feel like life is one big long date with ourselves where we learn more and more about ourselves as we grow older. But I think that if you're on a path where you're trying to figure out more and more of what your voice is, what you are, what your brand looks like, I think that's the right path. I think that's huge tip. I think another one that I really saw is engaging with people that you are following and people that are following you. Whenever I was trying to kind of really go into this as my job, I was, again, researching more of people who I follow and what do they do. And something that I saw was really successful and the people I found were most successful was they were super engaging with their following. They were answering questions. They were asking questions. They were making content that was finding the niche of their following. They were making tutorials that were asked of them. They weren't just making content for the sake of content, but they were actually, you know, documenting their lives. And so it was real, it was engaging, and it was answering this kind of ongoing dialogue with the people that they were following. And so I think that that's a really smart thing to think about and do, is if you're trying to get into the social media sphere, is to engage and thank your following, because that's the job, is being a, you know, an influencer to a following of people, and without them you wouldn't have a job. And so I think that that's super important, to engage with the people that follow you and cater to them, but also ask people that you are following, ask questions, find out more about what they do, and get out of your comfort zone. You know, I think that Nate actually was a person who, what's a good example of this? Right after I gave up my crown, I had been such a fan of Olivia Jordan my entire life, and I thought she was the coolest person ever. And Nate was like, you should message her. And I'm like, I'm not going to message Olivia Jordan. She's the coolest person I've ever seen in my entire life. And Nate like forced me to message
Nate her. Is Savvy's husband, to those of you that don't know.
Nate's the best husband in the world. We'll talk about him later. But he made me like I felt so uncomfortable, out of my comfort zone. And she answered back and we got coffee. And now we're super close. And it's just such a crazy thing thinking about, you know, getting out of your comfort zone and reaching out to the people that you follow and asking them questions and reaching out to them and reaching out to people that follow you, I think is a really key point in growing that family and growing that tribe.
That's so amazing. I love that. I also love when a Miss America and a Miss USA come together. You know who I interviewed yesterday was Kristen Dalton.
She is an angel, I will tell you. She's unbelievable. I love that woman.
She's hilarious. And she's today's episode, which is so funny. And it also came about through social media. So I totally relate to you on that.
She's amazing. But I think it's so cool. It's such a huge family. And we all kind of understand what it's like to be in a year of craziness. And so it's a really cool sisterhood that doesn't just stick within one system, which I really like.
So for social media, we'll just do one more question on this and move on. But are there like any practical tips? I know that you kind of have your like secrets of the trade. Like, are there any like, you know, these types of schedules or these types of apps or like, you know, you should really look into this type of stuff that you'd be willing to share to anybody out there?
Yeah, totally. So some of my favorite everyday apps that I use would be Color Story. That's one of the ones that I use to edit on my phone. It's kind of like Lightroom, but it doesn't take up as much space on your phone. And it also comes with the free grid planning component, which kind of changed my Instagram approach entirely, was planning out like a week, 2 weeks, even at times when life gets really crazy, a month in advance of what you're going to be posting and at what times. It allows you to plan all that out and move it around in a super malleable way. And what you can even do is connect that to your feed and even plan it out. I mean, that was a game changer for me. Another just a huge thing that I found was if you don't have your analytics, get them now. Change your Instagram to your business Instagram yesterday and learn it like the back of your hand. Figure out what your niche is. Figure out what your demographic is, where it is, how old are they, what are they like, what posts are they liking, what posts are they finding, having the most questions about, what topics do they want to use. And again, I'm going to go into engage with them. I think that was really, really huge in my growth, was figuring out what my followers wanted to hear from me and what they wanted to talk about. I think that was a really huge change in my growth and following. So I'd use Color Story. I love VSCO for editing and keeping it all within the same color palette. I think that's super helpful. Yeah, planning it out weeks in advance with Color Story as well. That's been super great. Engage with your following. I think really and truly though, what's been really key for me too is only following people that inspire me. You know, for a long time, I just like, you know, follow lots of people that were famous. But then at the time, you know, it goes back into the comparison thing. And if people that I was following, I was just comparing myself to them and I was getting, you know, insecure, if I was talking very hateful to myself, if I was just having these negative thoughts all the time, then I unfollowed and I filled my feed with people that inspired me and people that I wanted to emulate. I think that was a really huge thing. You know, I mean, I think that meditation is slowly becoming more mainstream, which I think is really amazing. I think meditation, everyone should do it every day, but we don't track our thoughts as often as we should. And our thoughts plant trees and gardens and forests in our brain. And what we feed them and the water that we give them and the seeds that we plant, you know, what we were thinking about a month ago is what's consuming our brains now. And I think that what's so important to do is consciously make an effort to fill your brain with positivity and with good, with light, without being as cheesy as and cliche as possible.
No, not at all.
that was a real game changer for me, because then Instagram became this thing that I was excited to be a part of. It didn't become this place full of pressure where I feel like I had to be like someone or be better than someone, because you never want to think that. And you know, that's something we have to fight. We want to be supporting each other. We want to be, you know, women supporting women. That's what we want to be like. And so if there's something that giving you a different, you know, area than that, I think that's, you need to change that.
So I think that it would be, if somebody that's an outsider or might know you a little bit, looked at you and saw you on Instagram, they think that you have a perfect life.
Oh my goodness.
And, you know, to think about the fact that you or any Miss America could have issues with insecurity or comparison, it is kind of like, wow, like that's really relatable. So can you talk about like what type of insecurities kind of plague your life or have in the past, and what do you do about that?
You know, I think what's even crazier, and I know that you can relate to this too. During my year as Miss America, you know, you look at it and you would assume that that's the year that you are most confident. That's the year that you are living your best life. And truly, that was probably the most insecure, most defeated, most lonely, and at times, you know, depressing year. And it starts from, you know, you're forced onto this, not forced, you volunteer for it, but then you go into it. You go into this platform where a lot of people suddenly have opinions on your life. And a lot of people suddenly have control of your life. And that's very unprecedented for any real job, but for anyone, especially when you're
any real human.
Right, exactly. And so I was thinking back to this actually. I wrote every single day in my journal during my year as Miss America. And even if it was, I tried to just write down what was happening that day. And there were, you know, days where it even just said tired, or it even just said like, I'm done. And there were days where it just said, I'm defeated. And it stemmed from, you know, me reading comments online. It stemmed from me reading anonymous pages saying, I remember very vividly, there were these pictures put up from right when I was crowned and like 3 months afterwards. And they were debating what dress size I was now. And it really shook me. It really shook me. And I hated admitting that. But there were days when I would look in the mirror and put the crown on and would think to myself, no one's going to believe that you're Miss America. No one's going to believe that you look like Miss America. No one's going to think that you deserve this. Everyone's going to believe that the girl behind you should have. And it took me, you know, probably 3 months of living in that. And I hate saying it wasn't until about March of my year that I finally was like hit with the slap in the face of, again, I'm going to go back to this, but I feel like I am a collection of the people that I, you know, look up to and put in my life. But I thought to myself, okay, who are the women that I look up to? And what are the characteristics in them that I look up to? And the characteristics I looked up to were creativity. They were loyalty. They were humility. They were making others feel special. It was the way that they interacted with other people, the priorities in their life, their work ethic. And none of the women that I look up to, none of the reasons why I looked up to them were their dress size. And that was a thing that kind of really shook me and kind of made me frustrated with myself that I for so long put so much of my worth in the words of people that I didn't even know. And I think that that's something really scary that social media has created, is it's created a very false sense of worth for a lot of people, me especially, not especially, but me as well. And I think that it took me realizing, okay, well, who do I want to be and who do I want people to say that I am? And none of it was, you know, I want people to remember me as being super skinny or being, you know, having the best hair or being the most fashionable or giving the best speeches. But I want people to remember me as someone that made other people feel like Miss America. And then my attitude shifted from there because my priorities and my worth was placed in something that A, I could control, but B, was something that would carry on long after I was even gone, and something that really made a difference. And I think that even now, you know, after the crown, that's another conversation, but even after being Miss America, that's something that's I've been very thankful for that I did during my year. And I made a decision to kind of shift my priorities and shift my hopes and the way that I viewed myself off of what other people said that I was into who I said that I was.
Now, post Miss America, are you doing what you thought you'd be doing? Have things changed? You know, because I think we all come out of the year and we're like, oh, I have a plan. I'm going to do X, Y, and Z, and everything's going to be easy breezy. Nothing's going to get in my way. And then sometimes things don't go as planned.
The last month of my reign, it's always so funny when I think of the word reign. I don't know why, but the last month of my reign.
Oh, girl, you were reigning. You were reigning the queen.
I feel like I have to be British or something. But the last month of my year, we'll say, I feel like I didn't say that, was really interesting because I reached out to formers and I asked them, hey, like, what was the hardest part of transitioning? Because like, I wanted to prepare myself. And a lot of people said, you know, that it was really sad for them, that it took them a good 5 years to feel back to normal, and that I would be depressed afterwards, and that I would, you know, be really sad. I would feel like there was like an emptiness in my life. And I don't know why, but honestly, I don't remember being so giddy my last day.
Like, we're like, bye.
We popped champagne when we got back to the room. Like, it was so much fun. And I think that, I don't know why, I'm so thankful that I had this outlook, but I was just so excited to get to finally be me. And yes, Miss America was the absolute best year of my life, but it was the absolute hardest year of my life. And I was so ready to take everything that I learned and use it in my life as savvy shields. I was just so ready for it. And I had lots of plans. You know, I think that, you know, as Miss America, we learned to wear lots of hats. And so that makes sense as a job for the rest of our life to wear lots of hats, which kind of works, but also kind of doesn't. And so I think for the first, you know, few months, I was trying out all the hats that I wore and try to figure out which ones, you know, not just which ones was I good at wearing. I'm trying to keep this hat analogy, which ones, you know, trying to figure out which, you know, hats that I was good at wearing, what things I was good at doing, but what did I actually like to do? And what do I actually want to carry on as a job for the rest of my life? And so I think that I took, I would even say probably until the last few months of really figuring out, okay, you know, I can do X, Y, Z, but I really only want to do Z and X, you know, and trying to figure out what that meant. I don't know if I would, well, I knew that I was going to get married. So that I did know was going to happen.
And that's a job.
In itself, it's a full-time job. But I knew that that was going to happen. But beyond that, you know, there's been so many amazing things that have happened this year that I couldn't have planned out beforehand. And so many great things that I'm so thankful for that I wouldn't have had. But I think one of the biggest lessons I've learned and one of the biggest things that being Miss America taught me was that I'm a lot stronger than I think I am, and that I can handle a lot more pain than I initially think. And I think that's something, I'm going to take a huge jump here, but when I watched it, you know, when after you, did you see Wonder Woman, the movie?
Of course.
You know how awesome you felt afterwards?
Absolutely.
So in my brain, I was like, wow, is this how guys feel all the time? Because so many male superhero movies are out. And afterwards, after watching Wonder Woman, I was like, oh my gosh, like I am the ruler of everything. This is awesome. Kind of like when I watched Game of Thrones and Daenerys is like riding the dragon. I'm like, yeah. This is my life. But I think, you know, I think as women, we don't normally associate ourselves with being totally intolerant to pain. We feel it out, which is the strength in itself. And I think that is our strength, is that we do feel it out. We are capable of being extremely empathetic and extremely strong and extremely sensitive all at the exact same time. And I think that's one of the biggest lessons I took away from being Miss America. And that's one of the things that's really been implemented in my year this past year.
So looking back at your year, what were like the highlights, like your favorite moments? Because we all know there's challenges, but what were like those best moments when you were like, oh my God, I am the queen?
Oh, the queen? I don't know about those moments. I was first thinking, whenever you were leading up, I was thinking, and I know you know this full well, but every single moment you would go into a hospital and you would go into an event with Children's Miracle Network and you would sit down with the kids. I mean, those are the moments that will carry with me for the rest of my life. Those moments when you watch a kid take their first steps as a 10-year-old, or when you are sitting with a family who doesn't know the future of their kid. I mean, those were the moments when, you know, I was slapped in the face with my own reality and remembered why we wanted to be Miss America in the very first place. So those are the moments that I very often think back to and remember of my favorite moments. Those, you know, going overseas, being in, you know, Kuwait and Egypt and Jordan. I've never seen so much sand in my life, but I've also never been more proud to be an American in my life either. You know, it's those moments that, I mean, there's no way that I would have ever done that if I wasn't Miss America. And I'm forever grateful for that. But I think when you're talking about what moments did I feel like I am the queen, I would have to go back. You know, I think obvious answer would be when we did the red carpet things. Those were just very out of body. I'm like, I'm a college student. What am I doing here? At the other times, you know, I think that whenever I would go to state orientations and
oh my God, yes, I am so on the same wavelength with you.
Best ever. I mean, like, because I remember, I mean, even meeting you for the first time, I was freaking out because you're Kira Kazantsev and you were Miss Kira. And so going to state orientations not only put everything into perspective and every hardship that I was facing during my year kind of just washed away when, you know, you would interact with and talk to and see firsthand the influence that you're making on so many girls. I mean, that's a, you know, huge responsibility and kind of a, I mean, it's really humbling at times, just realizing the impact that you have. But those were some of my favorite moments, hands down. We're at orientations with all the other Miss and teen contestants, hands down.
All those young women still continue to look up to you, obviously. But I'm sure it would be really interesting for them to hear, like, how did Savvy Shields become Savvy Shields? And, like, what is your background and how did it like prepare you to become the human that you are? So just give us like your whole backstory of life, if anybody out there doesn't know, and how you just became the person that you are today.
Okay. So I was born and raised in Fayetteville, Arkansas, rodeo home of the Ozarks. And I was baptized in a horse trough and loved every
That's
minute.
That's the detail that I needed in life.
That's basically it. And then here we are now. So I loved it. I mean, every birthday when I was, you know, a little kid, we would go to the rodeo. And I'm forever grateful to be from Arkansas. You know, I've never felt so much love in my life than when I became Miss Arkansas. I mean, that state is, I'm forever grateful. But I feel like I'm about to like share my testimony right now. I grew up in a Christian home, but never thought much of it. And I became, you know, I am a very faith-based person, but I guess my self-claim to my faith and my self-conviction didn't really happen until college. I grew up extremely insecure. Started dancing when I was 3, and that was a huge creative outlet for me. But I grew up painfully, painfully insecure and was constantly correcting.
Why? Where do you think that came from?
You know, I've thought about that 100 times over, and so has my therapist. But let's think, you know,
therapy is great. I always recommend therapy on my episodes. Like, go talk to somebody.
I think it should be a mandatory thing that every human goes into counseling. I really do. It is unbelievable to realize where your scars come from. But I think that I grew up a perfectionist and didn't know what that was. I didn't have a name for it. I just kind of thought everyone was that way. You know, I kind of thought everyone was like me in the sense of everyone kind of hated themselves and that's how it was. That's just what you did, is that you constantly tried to fix yourself. And, you know, I started in Miss America organization when I was 13 because I wanted to keep dancing more. And, you know, subconsciously, I think that I wanted to kind of feel the need that I didn't need to be insecure. And, you know, in the beginning, when you win a local title, you know, for that day, that week, you really do feel confident. You have people clapping for you, cheering on you, saying, see, you don't need to be insecure. See, you are pretty. See, you are successful. You are smart. And, you know, that started from a very young age, and I never really dealt with that until college. When I was a freshman in college and sophomore in college, and I'm actually really excited I get to talk to you about this because I've talked to a lot of, like, orientation. When I went to the orientations, mm-hmm. Our favorite weekends of the year.
Where we were the queens.
Where we were the queens. Those were the high points of my life, let's be honest. And so I talked to girls about this, but I'm excited that we get to share this on another platform. But my freshman and sophomore year of college, I was diagnosed with chronic depression disorder and chronic anxiety. And I really struggled coming to terms with that. For a very long time, I thought something was wrong with me, that I wasn't doing enough to fix that. And it became a vicious cycle of I would get depressed. I would be frustrated that I was depressed. I would try to fix it. But obviously, you can't just fix it overnight. That's something that happens over years and years, and it would happen in this vicious cycle. And it was probably 2 years of that. And, you know, I had really amazing friends and I had a really amazing family that, you know, would have open conversations with me about it for the very first time. And I think it was probably my sophomore year of college that I really opened up about even to myself and realized, okay, this is not how I want to live the rest of my life. Like, this is okay that I'm dealing with this, and this is okay that this is happening, but this is not who I am, but this is something that I'm dealing with. And so I started going to counseling, started going into therapy, and started for the very first time really opening up about the scars that I had and the demons that I had. And so I think that would, again, when you have 20 years of negativity and of hateful comments towards yourself that you yourself are saying, I mean, it's not going to cure itself in a month. You know, it's going to take years and years of very intentional positive reinforcement of self-love and self-care and doing things for yourself that don't feel good, but you know are going to be so much better for you later on. Example, running or working out or things that you don't necessarily want to do, but you know long-term are really helpful. Being open about your conversations, being open with people around you of how you're feeling. And I think honestly, the biggest change that I saw in my life was being open and being okay with feeling it. You know, for a very long time, I think I've often seen and other people that I've talked to who have struggled with mental illness and depression was not feeling it, because if you feel it, then it becomes real. And if you let yourself feel these things, then it really does mean you have a mental illness, which I think I'm so thankful it's becoming more of a conversation because people are talking about it more and more, and it's becoming, you know, not as scary, because it's not. Not everyone deals with it, but so many people do. And
on some level, yeah.
Absolutely. And so talking about it openly to myself and letting myself feel these things was a huge, huge breakthrough for me. And then what became even more of a breakthrough for me was, again, I talk a lot about thought patterns. And I know I said earlier that, you know, the things that we plant in our brain become trees and gardens and forests in our brain. So, you know, there's this thing called our think bank. And so I'm using hand motions right now, but you can't see them. But at the very top of our think bank is the things that we say. Right underneath that is the things that we do. Right underneath that is what we think about. Right underneath that is our subconscious. And underneath our subconscious is this think bank that holds everything. And this kind of bar goes up and down. So what's underneath our subconscious, our think bank, fills up our subconscious, which fills up our thoughts, which fills up the things that we do, which fills up the things that we say. So to change my entire think bank, I had to start from the top, and I had to totally change the things that I said. And so I would start memorizing Psalms and the Bible, and I would start memorizing chapters of the books of the Bible and Psalms, and I would start memorizing quotes and memorizing and writing down. All of my windows in my house became written with quotes of self-love and written with quotes of positivity, because that slowly melted its way into the things that I was doing and the things that I was thinking and into my subconscious. And over years, that was filling up my think bank. And so I think that that's something that really changed for me. And that's how I dealt with the insecurities that, you know, were my lifetime in the making. And so it's an exciting thing to get to talk about. And I hope that, you know, as people go on, this changes and it becomes more of a norm, which it already is, but that makes me excited. But
yeah, but I think it's really great for somebody like you to say, like, I have been through something. I have been through this, and I am on the other side, and I've allowed myself to feel pain, and pain does not equal weakness.
Yes, absolutely. I think that's like one of the biggest, you know, lies that we tell ourselves, is that if I'm sad or if I'm scared or if I'm fearful, that therefore equals me being a bad person or me not being successful or me not being good enough. I love that.
So for somebody that has this background and has a history of this, does Miss America become then a healing vessel for you?
I think that, you know, I'm pausing and I'm laughing at myself, because if you asked me that during the year, I would have said, heck no.
Because it's a tough environment to place yourself in.
I mean, good Lord.
So like my curiosity is, how does young Savvy Shields decide that Miss America is the dream?
Cy Young Savvy Shields decided that Miss America was the dream when she, as a little perfectionist, wanted to dance more in front of other people. And this is the outlet that she got to dance. I loved dancing when I grew up. And then, you know, Young Savvy got to see and watch. I was Miss Teen Arkansas when I was 13. And so I watched my Miss Arkansas do the job. And I saw firsthand the influence and impact that she made in other people's lives and in my own life. And I wanted that. And I wanted to change, and I wanted to influence my state. I wanted to be just like her. I saw how much change she was able to make with just her one voice, and I wanted to do that as well. And so I think the dream came when I was 13, but the dream of Miss America really isn't real, because that never really happens in real life. And so you always have the dream of your state, and then you just kind of, you know, and I know this isn't true, but I always give advice to girls that whenever you go, even to state, but the goal should be that you walk away knowing you would not have changed a single thing, because you cannot control the outcome. But that you walk away knowing, I would not have changed a single thing about how I performed. And that's, you know, you're going to walk away a better version of yourself if you do that. And so I think that that's, you know, I don't think, I know that's where it started, was I wanted to make an impact, and I wanted to influence my state, and I wanted to make things a little brighter and, you know, make things a little bit more sunshiny. And that's what I wanted to do. And so that's where it kind of started. And, you know, if you told me then that I would have been Miss America, there's no way in the world I would have believed you in the slightest.
Same.
Literally no way. I would have laughed in your face.
Well, because it's such a crapshoot, and I don't think people realize truly how much of a crapshoot it is.
And that's the word everyone always uses every time, because it's so true. I mean, it's you can't control it. And I, you know, there's something liberating in that. If there's always... You know, you always get asked when you're Miss America, what's the one piece of advice you give to other contestants? And I always say, know that when you walk into the week of, you can answer every single question perfectly. You can hit every single fuerte. You can hit that high note. You can, you know, have the perfect interview. But if it's not your time, you're not going to win. But in the same thread, you can fall flat on your face. You can bomb every single question. But if you're supposed to win, it's supposed to be you to change the world that year. There's nothing you can do to stop it.
Yeah. When you did win, take us back to the moment. You're holding hands. I think it was Miss Texas and Miss Maryland.
Was. Well, and so this is also something that people have always asked, but I guess that now, since, you know, I'm so far removed, I can start saying now. But Maryland was saying in my ear, and you can watch, you can actually see her mouthing the words on stage, but she literally said to me, "You're going to be a great Miss America."
Yeah. So I was, you know, I try to prepare for my interviews. I watched it again and I was like, oh my God, I think she said, like, they're both looking at you like they know.
Yes. And I have literally, well, and Texas was, I mean, that week, Caroline's one of the sweetest people ever. I love her so much. We're still so close. So that was such a sweet moment to have with Caroline. But in that moment, you know, it's wild. It is wild. And I guess I can also say this too, because, you know, we're far out. It doesn't matter if I say this anymore. But so it was the day before the Miracle Mile Walk. So it was Friday morning. We were on stage doing camera blocking, and I was in my evening gown. I was like passed out on the stage, just like laying there. And they played the song, you know, "There She Is, Miss America." And I just heard this voice clear as day saying, "This is going to be you. Do you accept it?" And I remember just thinking, okay, I accept it. And then I just started laughing because I'm like, no one is ever going to believe me when I start telling people this. And I remember that night I would like look at my family and I was kept thinking like, do they know? Do they know what's going to happen? Like, do I know what's going to happen? And so it was this really weird piece. And then to come find out later, like a month later, my mom told me that exact same time on Friday morning, she had this voice that just told her it's going to be her and I'm going to take care of her. And so it's kind of wild thinking of, you know, again, I'm a pretty faith-based person. I don't want to say religion because that's another conversation, but a very faith-based person. We'll get into it.
We can talk about that too. I feel like I've been talking a lot about religion lately, but that's a different conversation.
I love talking about it. But furthermore, I can't. I need to stop saying that.
Therefore,
during my reign when it started, it, you know, there was this kind of moment of peace. You know, I remember it in pictures, you kind of black out and you don't really, you remember it in moments. So like, I remember still of seeing Nate's face when I was at the very end of the runway. And then, you know, that night I remember like Sierra getting lipstick out of my teeth and then everything else is kind of blank. And so I feel like I kind of woke up from that blackout, maybe month two of being Miss America, started realizing what was going on. But again, I mean, it is a year where you kick into survival mode real fast. I mean, you don't stop. And I was talking to Nate about this actually the other day. I don't know if it was until I went back to Miss America this year that I had actually processed that I did that and that that was me. It took watching it from the outside perspective of actually realizing like, wow, like, did I really do that?
I know. I look up at those contestants and the ladies and I'm like, I cannot believe I ever did that. Like, it's so hard.
It's such a weird, crazy thing. And it's such an amazing blessing and opportunity. But I get so emotional whenever I look at it now and I look at these girls now and I'm like, how did I do that? Like, that just makes it, I don't know how. I don't know how.
But coming back and seeing it is almost like cathartic?
Extremely. Oh my goodness, extremely. And I even told, you know, well, one of my bridesmaids actually was Miss Georgia, Annie, love that girl. So I was like, well, of course I have to go. My bridesmaid's in there. But it was very selfishly, I was like, I have to go to this because I want to see it in a year where it's not my dream and it's not my goal and I'm not competing and I'm not in it. I'm not giving up a crown. Like, I just want to watch. I just want to be there. And it was, again, I think I finally processed what in the world happened to me that year just now. And it's kind of a crazy, crazy thing. But I think that that kind of happens, you know, in all phases of our life. I mean, when I was competing for Miss America, I'm pretty sure I thought that I had conquered every fear, every insecurity I've ever had. You know, I'm pretty sure I thought that I was like, literally, this is my peak in life. It goes up from here. I'm awesome. I've dealt with I'm ever going to need to deal with. And there we have it. And then, you know, you win and that's obviously not the case. And
you get a whole new set of problems.
Right, but I feel like that's kind of just life. I mean, even afterwards, you know, I was, you know, just so excited. And I was like, all my problems are gone now. But then again, in every phase of life, there are new struggles, there are new thorns, there are new weeds, but it's a whole new season of gardening. And I remember even saying after Miss America to Nate, I was like, I'm just tired of growing. Like, can I just like be done with like molding? And can I just be done with like becoming a better version of myself? Like, can I just
never
stay? Like, it's such a funny thing as you go through these seasons of extreme change and then rest and then extreme joy. And then you go through mourning and it's a really crazy thing. And, you know, the year as Miss America kind of is a huge catalyst where you just experience all of it in a very short amount of time.
Yeah, it's very condensed.
Very condensed.
So one of the most recent seasons of joy for you is getting married.
It was.
Tell us about Nate. How did you guys meet? How did everything kind of transpire? How did he deal with Miss America? And then we'll talk about all your wedding planning process because I'm sure there's people out there that want to hear any advice that you have.
He's an angel, I'll tell you. He's the freaking man. So I met him. He was a groomsman in a wedding that I went to. And I was like, holy shillelagh, that's a really hot guy. Let me and so I just danced, flipped my hair a lot. But
oh my God, savvy.
So that was like the worst thing. So it's our friends that like wedding that we met at. And they said later, they looked at their wedding footage. And for 5 hours, I'm in the back of every single shot, like flipping my hair, like dancing like a wild woman, trying to get Nate's attention.
Classic.
But not knowing Nate, that did not work. And so finally introduced myself to him at the end of the night. And then that was kind of it. You know, we kind of were like, oh, okay, this sounds great. Like, you're my best friend now. Awesome. That was kind of like, it was in game from day one. And we've been long distance the entire time. You know, he was still in law school at Georgetown in DC. And he was honestly the person that encouraged me to compete again for Miss because I had never competed in a Miss. And I was kind of telling him, you know, I feel like this is something I want to do. I feel like this is something I should do. And, you know, I'll say this 1,000 times over, but he saw the potential in me that I never knew that I had. And he made me actually believe that I had it. And so he encouraged me to compete. And so I did. And he handled it with so much grace that he gave me. I'm telling you, there is a special place in heaven for pageant boyfriends. The things that
seriously,
no man should have to deal with. But you know, he was a rock my entire year. But looking back, there would be days when I would call him where I'd be super excited. The days when I was at orientations and I was on cloud nine. But there were also days, you know, where I would call him bawling my eyes out. And, you know, it was a really amazing thing because every single time he would bring it back to, remember why you did this. Remember why you did this. You know, this is a year. And I'm forever grateful. He is the head to my heart. I will tell you that 1,000 times over. He is all logic and I am all emotion. So we make a really good team.
That's great. Yeah.
We dated for about 4 years-ish. And last December, he totally surprised me. I thought I was going to an appearance, had literally filled out a contract for like with like someone that I work with a lot. Like they told me exactly what they wanted me to wear. I thought I was giving a speech, showed up at my favorite art museum and he was there waiting. And then I was like, oh no, it started falling. Yeah. Then we got engaged and it's something that I always, you know, again, a different conversation, but I'm really passionate about because for a very long time, I tried to find my worth in guys for sure. And try to find my worth on if guys liked me or not. And, you know, I get to talk about this a few times whenever I go to, you know, youth groups or girls groups, but I think it's just so important for females and women to wait for a partner that makes them the best version of themselves and does not like them based on things that they can do for them or the way they make them feel, but just on who they are as a human being. And I'm very, very thankful that I found that in Nate, that he's also my best friend. It's a very great thing. So
yeah, and you guys are partners and kind of going through life in tandem.
It's a team. It is a freaking team, I'm telling you. And I think that Miss America, you know, we say this all the time. I know this isn't true, but we always say if we can get through that, we can get through anything.
Yeah, it is true.
It is true. I mean, going through a life where your relationship is, you know, kind of put under a microscope and a spotlight and maybe even like a blowtorch at times. I think that, you know, you can really get through anything after it.
Yeah. So for all the fun wedding planning that you got to do, where did you get your inspiration? What was your vision? Like, tell us about how everything actually came together.
I am forever thankful. There are still times when I look back and I'm like, that was insane. Like everything that we did. And so from day one, you know, I started planning like right away. And that is like one of my biggest pieces of advice is get all of the planning done, like done, like all minor details a month before. And then that way, that very last month, you can actually just like be in the moment of like, holy shillelagh, I'm getting married. Because if you're running around town trying to find another napkin or trying to, you know, figure out who's getting in what car, transporting to what location, at that point, I mean, there's already so many times Nate and I were like, should we just elope right now?
Yeah.
So I think that planning everything super ahead was really, really great. But my vision for it was that I just wanted to, since Nate and I met at a wedding, I just kind of wanted it to feel just like really, without sounding super cliche, but like just really dreamy and really romantic. And yeah. So I just kind of wanted everything to kind of feel like a garden that you just, or an art installation that you just like walked into and hung out with for a night. And so it was amazing. I'm literally can't even believe it's real, all of it. Getting wedding pictures like every day and looking at it and I'm like, holy crap, like what did we do? But it was amazing. I'm so, so thankful.
And now you guys are just kind of creating your own little family unit. And what's next for Savvy Shields? What's the next big thing on the horizon that you're really excited about?
You know, I think what's super exciting about looking at the future is, and this has gotten me, I think that, you know, I keep going back to this, but Miss America is kind of a pivotal year in our lives. But something that being Miss America taught me was that I don't have to have, or I should not have it all planned out. So I would say that I have my life 80% planned out, 20% left up to the odds and to surprise and to spontaneity. But I think that what's super exciting right now is that I finally found a niche that I want to create. And I finally found, you know, a job that I want to put all of my heart and soul into. And I get to do it, you know, alongside my best friend, which is just the best feeling in the world. And so I'll be doing a whole lot more painting, a whole lot more creating, a whole lot more throughout this whole social sphere, a whole lot more writing and everything that I really love to do, which is literally the freaking dream. Now, again, to bring it back to reality, there are a lot of days where that's really, really hard. And I think that that's something that I want to work on, is being more transparent on, there has to be rain for there to be flowers. And making that, you know, kind of a mantra that I'm more transparent about, especially through this wedding season, which was absolutely the happiest thing ever. But there were a lot of arguments. And there was a lot of, you know, crazy, you know, stressful nights of seating arrangements. I remember literally, this is a terrible example, but I woke up in the middle of the night, like 2 weeks before the wedding, convinced the entire cast of New Girl was coming to my wedding. And so I was trying to figure out where in the world to seat them, like on a table. Like I was like, where do I put Winston and Schmidt? I don't know. And literally for like 4 hours, like trying to rearrange the entire table or the entire like reception. I don't know. It was so ridiculous.
That's so great.
It's crazy. You will have it. I promise you. In this wedding planning process, you will have the highest highs, but also the just most ridiculous, like, freakouts ever, where you're like, why do I care this much?
I had a dream last night that I didn't book out hotels, like create yes! room blocks, and that everybody was like going to camp. So I literally woke up in a cold sweat this morning. Like, I am having people fly in from Russia to camp in a tent.
From Russia to camp in a tent. I mean, you could do that. It'd be a very bohemian wedding, but you could do it.
You know, I'm not that cool. I'm not a cool bride. Sorry. I'm just not. I know who I am. I am who I am. And I'm just not that cool. I love camping. I love camping. I just don't think that
I am,
you know,
who I am.
Yeah. It's going to be great. Anyway, that's a whole other thing. Savvy, I have so loved getting to have this conversation with you. And I feel like I've just learned so much about you. And I think that there are so many girls out there that are going to love this. So before we sign off, do you have any last words to anybody out there that looks up to you?
You know, I really want to go with the very lesson that I was saying. There has to be rain for there to be flowers. You know, I think that I've been very convicted in this last season of my life of just showing the really high points, when in reality, to get to where you are, there has to be a lot of lows and there has to be rain for there to be flowers. And when you look at people and you look out to people, know that every single person is dealing with their own battles and that we are all in this together. And to be kind, to be sweet, to encourage, to reach out, to ask questions are all things that you should do. Those are things that, you know, I wish I learned and I wish I implemented in my life earlier on.
Tav, thank you so much.
I just want to give you a virtual hug right now. I'm like hugging my computer.
I know, me too. I just, yeah, this is so wonderful. This is great for me at 9 a.m. on a Wednesday, feeling super excited about life.
No.
Oh my gosh.
All the days.
All the things. Okay, give everyone your like social media. Where can everybody find you if they don't follow you already?
I've been Savvy Janine on the Instagram. Find me on my website. That's called Savvy Janine too. Janine's my middle name. Oh, they're like, where is that coming from? So yeah, that's me. I'm everywhere.
Check her out, guys. Savvy Janine. Okay, Savvy, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Bye.
Thanks for listening. Tune in every Wednesday for the latest episode of the What We Do by Kira Kazantsev podcast. Follow at Kira Kazantsev and at What We Do Podcast on Instagram for the latest podcast updates, or go to whatwedo.live or whatwedopodcast.com for our blog, bonus content, and info. Questions? Email us at info@whatwedo.live. See you next week. What We Do by Kira Kazantsev is mixed and mastered by Resonate Recordings. Interested in starting your own podcast? As a What We Do listener, you can go to resonaterecordings.com to get your first episode produced for free. Just let them know we sent you. If you have a podcast or are considering starting one, I can't recommend them enough. They are amazing audio engineers that understand podcasting like no one else. Go to resonaterecordings.com to get your first episode produced for free today.